Hi, I'm Josh, and I'm getting confused. Do you watch It, and then It Follows, and then It Comes at Night, or is it It, and then It's Alive, and then Get Over It? This is a confusing series.
It doesn't. There's not as much connective tissue as you would think.
Yeah, it's like Iron Man, Iron Man 2, and Iron Lady. It doesn't make any fucking sense.
Nice. Hi, I'm Matt, and I was working after having studied up from watching A Dark Song, and I think I've figured out now how to summon all the incontrovertible evidence of otherworldly nastiness that I would need. And the way to get A Dark Song is you have to combine the talents of The Cure and Morrissey with the reversed back masking on a Lady Gaga track, and you will have A Dark Song.
That makes perfect sense.
Of course.
It's tailor-made for college radio in 1994. this is Charlie down in Austin, Texas. I don't have a joke for Pet, but partly because I just came from a screening of Brian Taylor's movie Mom and Dad, and I will say, and I will say, and I will say 10,000 times that my favorite freakout is the five-alarm Nicolas Cage freakout. It is just the best. The best. There's nothing better.
And we are going to watch Mary Duck Brandybuck keep a chicken in a cage this week because it's harsh or hot dog.
Sick breakfast.
Oh, damn it. That was the joke.
Yeah, it was.
Fun. So this week we had three movies that we watched, and they were films, and we watched them, and nobody can take that away from us. But before we get into those, Charlie has been burning the midnight oil at both ends to go to Fantastic Fest this week, as well as raising a kid and being a functioning adult, which I find striking because I can barely get out of bed in the morning. So Charlie, tell us a little something about Fantastic Fest, if you would.
Yeah, so actually this year I'm doing less of the crazy as in the past. I do full days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then I do, like, after work, I go to the all-evening ones, and then the night I do all stuff. But my darling child is in marching band, and that means that we get up at 5 o'clock in the morning so I can get his ass to practice. So the midnight screenings have more or less been out because, you know, 2.5 hours of sleep is not a thing that a person on the business end of coming up on 40 years old can swing. So I just going into it, I made my peace with the whole thing, and I've been really happy with my decision, honestly. Like, it's made me enjoy the stuff that I've seen more, and I feel like I don't feel like I'm just going to have the mainline freeze-dried Folgers to stay awake at work. And, like, it's one of those, like, stupid adult decisions that actually turned out to be good. So I was like, all right, well, fine. Anyway, so it's been kind of an interesting bag. In years past, there's been stuff where, like, you know, there's always a few things you're like, God damn it, that was awful. What the hell did anybody see in that? And more or less this year, there really hasn't been a lot in that category. Like, you know, there's people like, oh, I didn't like that so much, or I didn't like this, but there's not been just sort of like rage having type of stuff, which has been kind of cool. I haven't seen a bunch of horror stuff, but there's a few that I wanted to highlight just real fast. The first of which is my favorite of the festival so far, which is the Scottish zombie musical Anne on the Apocalypse. On paper I was sold, and then they released the trailer and I was like, oh my God, I am super into this. And then I was like, then you get to see it and it's wonderful and almost made me cry a couple times, and it's funny and the lyrics are great and the choreography is great. The young lady who plays Anna, she's got this like magnetism about her. But it's not like a old, you know, sexy kind of, like, I don't mean like that. It's more just like she has a presence to her. Not unlike the way like Jamie Lee Curtis has a presence in some of this chalky kind of stuff that she was in, but she's still great in them. That kind of thing, where it's just like there's a magnetism to the lady that plays the lead. Really fun, really zippy. Just, it was really cool. I just had just an absolute blast. I have some footage. I don't know if I can get it to anywhere where we can post it anywhere, but on the world premiere on Friday, they had a zombie processional led by bagpipers. And so, we're all outside talking. I'll hear, suddenly hear the bagpipes. He looked down there because big zombie marks coming down the street with these bagpiper guys. And then all the directors and the producers, the guys are all wearing kilts and stuff. And then you have this zombie processional behind these bagpipes. I was like, oh, fuck yes. Fuck yes. And, so I had a little footage of that, which was really cool. And then the movie was wonderful. And so it's XYZ Films. So I think there's a good chance. I don't know if it'll get out by Christmas. I really hope it does. But I know that there's a good chance that it'll get out here pretty quick, and that's been my favorite of the festival so far. On to other things. The Stephen King adaptation of 1922, which stars Thomas Jane and Molly Parker, which is really good and very melancholy and very dark. It's like if John Steinbeck did an episode of Tales from the Crypt. It's just very you get what's coming to you kind of a deal. And it's very neat. And, I really like that quite a bit. I didn't see Gerald's Game specifically because it's going to be out on Friday. And so instead I saw Joseph Kahn's new movie. And the reason I bring this up is not a horror movie, but I bring it up because he did Detention. If everybody remembers Detention.
And Joseph, the insanity.
Joseph Kahn's crazy energy. He did this movie called Bodied, which is about this guy in graduate school who's doing his thesis on like battle rap and then gets involved in the battle rap scene. And my God, it was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. And it was just a fucking amazing movie. Just unbelievable. Joseph Kahn's, his style and his electricity just worked perfectly. So that was something else. I saw a movie yesterday called The Cured. And it's an Irish movie. And it supposes that there's a zombie outbreak, and then they find a cure. But what happens with the cure is that basically, the people that were zombies before remember what they did when they were zombies. And so, there's just, integration, reintegration into society thing that's causing all the strife and problems. Also, the zombies won't go after people that have been cured. I guess they just have the scent on them still. But it takes a little while to get to the point, but it's very cool. There's a lot of really creative ideas in there, which are real neat. So I thought that was quite cool. I like that a lot. A little somber Irish thing, but it was really good. And then the other one I wanted to mention was the one I just got out of this evening, which is, Brian Taylor, if you know the Crank movies, that's Brian Taylor. He's got this very, makes Joseph Kahn seem like Godard. You know, he's very frantic in his style. And this was a movie with Selma Blair and Nicolas Cage called Mom and Dad. And it's basically there's a staticky thing in the TVs and it makes all the parents want to kill the kids. Yeah. And it's a little choppy at parts, but there are some we've all seen and we've all maybe been part of this where you have the parents waiting outside the school to pick up the kids. Well, they flip that on its head. There's a wonderful little bit of business where all the parents are waiting outside to get the kids, you know, and it's it's great. There's a lot of great kid violence. There's one where a baby's in the process of being born and then the mom gets the murder kid thing and there's that whole bit. And then you have Nicolas Cage, which, ladies and gentlemen, you may have heard me mention this in the past. He's one of my favorite actors of all time. I love watching the man do anything. He's nuts and crazy and wonderful. And you get a 5-alarm Nicolas Cage freak out on this, which is just like a symphony. So much fun to watch. But Selma Blair gets her own version of a freak out, so they play well together. I really wish the director wasn't the director. He wrote it, apparently, and that's cool, and I wish they had somebody else to direct it, because at times that frantic style really detracts from it. But in terms of subversive, weird ass, fucking bonker shit that shouldn't exist, it's rad. Very bloody and just off. Definitely worth seeing for sure. I wish the style was a little bit more grounded, but, there's some bloody good fun to be had. And like I said, you come for the Nicolas Cage and you get the Nicolas Cage. So I've got a couple more horror movies to go and then the festival ends up. And as I mentioned in the past, I know people might be hearing all kinds of different things here and there. If you're curious about my feelings on the matter, you can send me a message and I'll be happy to talk to you about it. But I've been kind of keeping a policy of not making a public thing out of much of this stuff because it's a lot more nuanced but it's making national news, which makes it fun. So In any event, if you're curious about what I think, you can drop me a line and I'll be happy to tell you, but I don't want to talk about it here because it's a 5 hour long conversation. Anywho, so that's what I've been up to. Oh shit, I forgot about Vampire Clay. Christ sakes. Vampire Clay is a Japanese one where like this guy and it's like gets turned into clay and then like the clay ends up back in this art studio and then they like it kind of gets back to life and then like kind of attacks these students at this rural art school. And it's really low budgety, but it's like, it's one of those Japanese ones where you're like, this is going to be 3 hours long and it's going to be excruciating. Thankfully, it's very short. So I will give it that. And it's also fun to watch a little clay sculpture go nom, nom, nom on somebody's hand. That's super fun too. But I mean, on the whole, it's like, no, it's a little bit of a no kind of thing. However, one last little bit of thing that I want to mention. I'm talking to some people this week. A lot of people are in town for the festivals and whatever else. And I've heard now from a couple of different people after seeing it online about a month ago that the Japanese adaptation from last year called I'm a Hero is finally getting released at some point in the near future. So one of the best zombie movies the last 10 years will finally get released and we'll get a chance to see it. And you will get a chance to see it, ladies and gentlemen. And it's wonderful. So I've now heard this from three different sources that it's actually going to be out. It's finally got picked up for distribution region 1, so that'll be really, really great. Super excited for everybody to see that. So anyway, that's all the news that's fit to print.
Very well. Oh, I also watched Mother this past week.
Oh yes.
Since we have spoken to everyone. And don't believe the haters on this one because it's amazing. Every criticism I've heard of it is either it's impossible to follow and confusing, which it just fucking isn't. If you watch it, it pretty much unfolds in a very straightforward fashion. Or it's pretentious slash has too many ideas slash has it's hard on its sleeve too much, which is like it's too smart and is too creative, which fuck that. So I watched it. I enjoyed the hell out of it. And then I wondered why there was even a controversy about it, because as far as filmmaking goes, it's amazing. As far as acting goes, amazing. And is some of the just cleanest example of nightmare logic put to film that I've seen since Suspiria. And yeah, if you were sold a straightforward horror movie and that's what you went in for and you're not in for like surrealistic flights of bizarreness, then I can see not digging it. But anybody who tells you it's not good is full of shit. Go watch it.
I second that emotion.
Yeah, second that emotion.
Hey, yeah.
There it is.
You get me tired enough, I'm going to sing. Because, you know, usually I'm so shy about it. So first off, for the films we watched this week was a short one, and it was pretty short. A 3-minute little thing called Mimic, where a little puppet dude is walking down a row of boxes, and the boxes start making fun of him, and then a box eats him.
Yeah.
Oh, we watched a different short. Excellent.
Uh-oh.
I watched a different one that was a 2-minute long thing where like, it was like a guy is in bed and then he hears his kids was like, I'm scared of the thing. And he's like, no, we just moved into the house. You're okay. And he's like, no, what about the other thing? He's like, no, whatever. And then he like goes and looks in the kid room and then it's like, the kid's just like fast asleep. And it's like, well, shit. And goes back and then like this like weird bug-eyed monster's eating his wife. And so then fast forwards. And then it's like kids in bed, and then he hears his voice of his dad being like, hey, buddy, want to come sleep in our bed? And then that's it ends. So we watched a different short.
Oh. That was yours.
It was okay. It was okay. It was okay. It was all right. You know, no great shakes either way. This is what happens when you have no damn time. This is the problem.
I was going to say, we did link it in the show notes, and Matt did send us the link in the emails.
What's the email?
All these things are true.
You don't have to go it alone.
Right.
You can go your own way, damn it.
You can call it another lonely day, however that goes. You didn't miss much. It's a cute idea, but I don't think he did much of anything with it.
There's no real pulse there.
The one fun bit of it is that the director uses the Amazon boxes that have a smile on the side, you know, the Amazon arrow / smile. So there's like a row of boxes with no smile, and then you hear like, little laughing as the boxes are mocking him, and it pans back to the boxes, and some of them are turned around, so they have the little Amazon smile on them. So, like, honey, that was cute. I don't know why it had to be a puppet, but, I mean, if it can be a puppet, why not? But it's, I mean, it's a puppet that just kind of walks forward and opens a box. So, not like a flight of fancy that requires puppetry, I feel like.
Yeah, you can do impressive stuff with puppets. This one did, I'd say, competent puppetry, and that's about all. Like, there was nothing here that was like, oh, wow, like, what a neat thing that only puppets could achieve. Like, you know, we've seen some shorts that, like, were done in claymation or animation, and you're like, damn, that's a cool use of that medium. This was just a dude who was like, I like puppets, and I'm like, that's fine, I like puppets too, but it was a pretty lackluster short. There's barely a story, you know. It's the D&D monster is real. The end.
So I don't think you need to see this one. No. It's fine.
Yeah, I'd say you can give it a miss. I do desperately now want to find really cool puppet horror shorts, so that's on my back burner to-do list.
Find or create?
I suppose I know people.
We'll start with find. It's a busy time of year.
To be fair, it might be easier to create. We'll see.
Was it Gandhi or was it Jim Henson who said you must be the puppet horror short you wish to see in the world?
Yep. It was Gandhi or Jim Henson.
Zombie Jim Henson was what it was.
It's Gandhi Jim Henson.
I just
Jim Henson's To Catch a Predator.
This is a completely nonsensical bit of a rabbit hole and wondered or fallen in. All these things are true. What I was gonna say was I forgot one other horror related thing I was gonna say real fast, which was I got into the secret screening for the first time ever. Oh. I've swapped into it when I was doing press stuff years back, but I've never actually gotten like in the little ticket machine system. I've never actually gotten the secret screening, so I got it. And then everybody's kind of like talking about what they think it's gonna be. And, you know, different speculation about what it's going to be, all this kind of jazz. And then it was like, okay, well, it seems like what it's going to be is going to be Eli Roth's Death Wish remake. And I was like, cause somebody thought they saw him in town. And I was like, oh, God damn it. Like, I don't want that. And then, so then they get up there and then they do the thing and then people making guesses and the main program director guy and somebody says Death Wish and he's like, no, we'd be circling the drain at that point. And I was like, in my theater, there's five theaters that had it. And it was like, in my theater, there was like a collective sigh, like, huh, like, yeah. Phew. And it turned out to be, Iannucci's, the Death of Stalin, which was goddamn brilliant and funny and just so great. But it wasn't Eli Roth's Death Wish, so I did not see that.
I mean, that's probably fine.
Yeah, that's sort of my feeling on the matter. This is like, I don't need to go ahead and do that. So, but anyway, that just occurred to me, like, oh yeah, doi.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Our first movie this week, we'll call it, it was Dark Song or La Canción Oscura.
Ooh.
Available on your finer Netflixes everywhere.
Yep.
And this is a movie that is a woman enlists the help of a kind of Aleister Crowley, like a modern day, you know, schlub / Crowley wannabe.
Kind of an even more neckbeard Crowley.
Right. To do a very complicated ritual in an abandoned house that will help her contact her guardian angel so that she can ask for a favor. And the bulk of the movie is just the two of them kind of fighting and bonding and falling apart, doing this thing that's designed to, you know, break down your perception of reality. And just kind of a tense psychological drama with some incredibly weird shit mixed in, I think I would say.
That sounds about right. This is about half of what I want from a Constantine film.
Huh.
Because it's just brute force sorcery. You know, like, this isn't... I mean, yes, they're using spells and stuff, but the way they're using them, which, like you said, is insane and convoluted and, like, literally takes weeks or months, it just, to me, that reminds me of, like, the best part of Constantine, which is just like, okay, there's a way to do this by doing the proper spell, but rather than, like, having anyone that would be in a position of power from, like, the supernatural world teach you the proper spell, it's like they tried to brute force a combination lock. So you can picture people, like, trying spell after spell after spell, and eventually they get, like, okay, that got us a little farther along, so they write it down. And so you end up getting to the end, you know, but it's like someone giving you directions to, you know, the next town over, but they start by heading in the opposite direction, and eventually they just keep taking enough turns that they get to where they're going, and assuming that's the only way to get there, as opposed to the straight line that would have done it, that someone with a clearer view of the full picture would have had. And so I feel like they have this thing of just like, okay, we just know that this will all kind of work eventually, but it takes forever and it sucks. Because they're not supposed to be able to do it. That's not something humans are supposed to do. And that guy's like, yeah, but if you're a cocky enough jackass, you can just do it anyway. And I kind of like that.
And the wild thing about this is the rituals, according to people who have left comments on the IMDb and Why Would They Lie, this is one of the rituals that Crowley had written out in detail.
Oh, funny.
So this is something that somebody has actually tried for 8 months. You know, that is purifying your body, mortifying your flesh, and you have to have a house that faces this particular direction with these five rooms laid out this way so that you can draw the right symbols on the right floor in each of the rooms. And then you have to clear each circle with, you know, one of them is meditate for 3 days without moving, and one of them is, you know, drink a jar full of blood, and, or, I don't know, like a champagne flute probably for blood. Maybe a red wine, man. Collins.
It's like a flip. It's a flight. You have like, you have A negative and A positive and then O negative, and it's sort of like, and then you get like a Pilsner. It's like, oh, God's sakes.
No, it's an IPA, dude. There's always an IPA.
Of course, there always has to be.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are just three IPAs and you're like, where's the blood?
But you want a, like, you want a long,
light, like, fuck off.
You want a long stemmed glass for your blood, otherwise you'll warm it up too quickly with your temperature from your hand. So
that's practical and true.
Yep.
I thought that would just keep it from coagulating, which is a problem in the movie.
Yeah, that's true.
So this takes weird turns. Like, for a while, a goodly long while, you don't have any indication that there exists a supernatural in this movie's universe. Mm-hmm. And it really could just be delusional man and desperate woman. Yeah, delusional man or scammer man.
Yeah.
But he's going an awful long way for a scam.
For sure. Like, there doesn't seem to be a lot of benefits. So he'd probably, even if he was scamming, he would be doing it for what is probably a crazy reason.
Yeah, because she's like, she's paying him $80,000 for doing this ritual that could last 6 to 8 months.
It's almost easier to get a job.
Yeah. I mean, what if you only made $40,000 in that 8 months, but you were at home, you know, selling.
Dead cable, what, at least. Yeah.
Plasma. Yeah. 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 TV, at least. And there is a point at which you get, like, 3 months in, and she kind of grabs him and is like, it's not working. And he says, well, we have to start again. And then you have a montage of everything they did the first time that you watch them go through. So it is kind of a believable study of people under stress, but then things start to warp. Like, reality actually does start to warp in an interesting way.
Which in my estimation is really eerie. Like, it's just sort of like, once things actually, cause you're kind of convinced at that point, like, well, this feels like one of those ones that nothing was actually going to happen. And then it's like the little flittering gold bits and then the noise and the other kind of things. And as it kind of progresses, it's just like, oh, who's it? Cause it's like, if you're having to look at it through their prism, like, how broken down are they at that point? That, like, mm-hmm. that makes them more susceptible, or, you know, those kind of things. And it's like, gosh, that's, like, you know, a lot going on there. You know, just a little freaky.
I found it surprisingly satisfying for a movie that I thought might end up kind of, because I was fully, like, this is a movie where you could argue that not a lot happens for the bulk of it, because it is just two people kind of going through, you know, weird little rituals and motions and stuff. But I just kind of found it fascinating, I think, because, like I said, I immediately kind of likened it to Constantine and that kind of interesting stuff. And so I was just kind of fascinated by the process they were doing and kind of taking that journey with them. So that works for me. But for a movie that had, you know, ostensibly nothing happening for a long time, there's always that threat of like, oh, maybe nothing's happening because they don't know how to end this, or they don't have a big reveal to give us. And I would say the reveal is big enough for this movie. And, like, you know, when you mm-hmm. get your full, you know, the last chunk of the film where you get in your third act, like, the actual supernatural manifestations and whatnot, like, they were good enough to satisfy me. Like, I thought it was fun. It wasn't, wickedly over the top, but still had a sense of scale at a couple points that I thought was impressive.
Well, I also like the idea that once that door opens, it's sort of like, well, you've gone through all this rigmarole. Like, what are you letting out? Like, and he even says it very early on. He's like, that's the problem. It's like, you start doing this stuff, and then all kind of other stuff can happen. You know, it's like, it reminds me of Baskin. You know, sort of like, oh, we have this one problem. Like, no, you don't. You have a much bigger problem on your hands.
Yeah, I think that is that's a good point. Because she's like, so this will get us to X. And he's like, no, this will get us to anything above where we are.
Yeah.
You know, whatever chooses to pay attention to us is what we get.
I like him somewhere in the middle. She asks him why he does it. And he says knowledge.
Yeah.
And it's not like,
yeah, I like that.
It's not the power, you know, don't take money, don't take fame. It's that since this stuff exists, I want to know about it. And I thought that was insanely cool as a motivation.
And I thought it was
definitely see that being a thing.
Very relatable. Like,
well, it reminded me of that conspiracy movie. Remember we watched the conspiracy Aaron Poole movie? Where it's like, why are you deep diving into this? This is why? And it's like, well, because.
Once it exists, you can't leave it alone.
Yeah, it's the Everest thing of like, I mean, if you were told right now, like, okay, if you read the right books, you can see ghosts. If you do the right thing, you can travel to another dimension. Like, knowing that that is out there as a possibility, like, how do you ignore that? You know, like, knowing there's more to the universe than you've ever been aware of. Like, the only barrier would be, like, would we be able to put up with something as grueling and pain in the ass as this? Like, I bet I wouldn't have the stick-to-itiveness to do it. But I can also see how, you know, if you've got the willpower for it, like, why would you not want to know as much as possible about how the universe functions in ways that no other humans would ever understand? I think I would just be too damn curious, you know.
Although I think I would be content to read the peer-reviewed reports of it.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess it'd be one of those...
somebody verify it.
Yeah, no, I'd be happy for that first. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, well, if someone right now is just like, you can do this thing and you can actually go visit an alien planet and talk to aliens. Or you can hear that there are alien planets out there and, like, sure, other people get to do it, but, you know, unless you do it yourself, you'll never see or hear from one. It'll be as though they don't exist, except you know they do. I'd be like, oh, god damn it, now I really feel like I ought to go visit an alien. You know, just to have done it. So, yeah, I dug that. That's a smart motivation, I thought.
One of the other little bits that really got me was there's two little moments that the bearded fella did. One of them is, like, at one point, relatively early on, they're setting up all the stuff in the house. I think a couple weeks has gone by. And at one point, like, it's in the morning, and he's walking down the hallway and then stops. And one of the rooms has got some stuff in it, and he's just, like, flings a stick in there and then just keeps going.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's like, you know, different tonality. It'll almost be kind of comical, but it's like, what did that signify exactly?
Yeah,
like,
did that matter?
I don't know, but it's like, it's just, there's a purposefulness to it, which is like kind of, I don't know, there's something kind of neat about that. So there's that. And then later on when she's like, fuck it, I'm out of here. And he goes, no, you can't leave because then we'll be stuck here forever. And then, so you hear that, and then fast forward a little later, she's just like, no, she crosses the little plane and goes for a walk and all those kind of things. And once that occurs, that's when all the kabuki hobos show up, and they're just like, ah, I'm gonna get him, and all that kind of crazy stuff happens. But it's like, it happens like after she's sort of, you know, been like, split.
And yeah, once like, she breaks the rules, basically.
And that's the thing, and it's like, maybe his understanding was only to a certain point. It wasn't like, we're stuck here forever. It's, now the other team gets to do the Red Rover thing, and it's sort of like, now they have access. And it's sort of like, they'll get whoever they can get. And it's like, well, that sort of sucks for you, Beardo. You know, but it's like, but that really kind of gave me the will, that was another thing that kind of gave me the willies a little bit. This idea that like, he's really learned it, he spent all this time doing all these different things, and it's like, maybe you just didn't read enough, or maybe you misinterpreted the thing, or you know, whatever. But that's the thing that opens the door the wrong way, or whatever. And there's something really kind of nifty and dark about that. That's quite cool.
Yeah, I think.
Well, for the most part, you get that impression of him as he's that supremely confident, like Obi-Wan Kenobi, always knows exactly what's going on. And the woman is constantly second guessing him. To which he constantly has to kind of like, no, you told me this, you want to do this, shut up and, you know, and let me pour water over your head or whatever. But then as it breaks down, he starts to be more human. And he has the really gross scene where he forces her to strip. And she's like, "Ah, that wasn't part of the ritual. That was just for me." You know?
Yeah. That was fascinating.
And
that was like,
you see him as, like, that kind of shitty side comes out. And then after he gets stabulated, then he starts to fall apart. And you see the kind of fabric of everything start to unwind.
Yeah, it's the...
So that was fascinating. And when he wakes up dead, when she wakes up and he's dead, then there's just that sense of, oh, how fucked are we now?
Yeah.
Now we have no guide, and all of his books, like, struck through.
Yeah, oh, when God, he died. That's a shot. That shot is really creepy.
So she can't even try to reconstruct it. Yeah.
And then Megan pointed this out too, like the fact that he is like printing off parts of his ritual just from the internet, you know, early on is such a great thing of like, okay, is this guy just full of shit? Then it's also like, well, if these are just things people have learned and written down, of course, in this age, someone would have scanned this shit, you know, and you just have it as a PDF somewhere. But I think they do a great job with his character, as unlikable as he is for the majority of the movie. He is an amazing mixture of completely, conceited, cocky, and confident, because it's everything he does starts at the C. But when he's dealing with her, because obviously he knows more about any of this than her, or more likely than almost anyone else walking the planet, and is very secure in that knowledge. But at no point does he not also seem just as vulnerable as her to the outside forces.
That's the
He knows how to do this, but that in no way makes him safe. And that's a weird line to try to walk. That's a very important distinction.
That's a very important distinction.
That's
what I mean. That's a really eerie thing. You know, it's like, oh, just know enough. It's an old phrase, you know enough to be dangerous. Like, well, yeah. Yep. It's like, you know, and also too, when she lies about the reasoning for wanting to do the thing, you know, like wanting to talk to the child versus like getting revenge on somebody or getting somebody, you know, his lover anymore. And it's like, you know, he initially, his gut reaction is, no, we can't do this. And then it's like, it kind of goes back through, again, like by being more, probably more of a novice than it seems like it is. But it's also one of those things too, where it again opens that door. It's like, if the recipe calls for ginger and you instead use gin, it's like, that's going to be different than, big cookies. Like, it says it calls for flowers. Like, no, not flowers, flour. Like, yeah, I was wondering, like, it turned out weird. It's just one of those things where he's got access, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's got, like, you know, competency necessarily. And it's like, God, that's an interesting idea.
Well, because it's also, I think, because of things like that, and the fact he's like, well, now we got to start over, or now we got to do, you know, whatever. Like, he's baking, not cooking. The power is not innate in him. He has to follow the recipe perfectly. And that's why he, I think, you know, is so... It's great with how dismayed he gets, you know, because he's angry, but he's also worried, you know, like when she says she wants to leave, or when he finds out she's been lying, like he's pissed, not only because he's wasting his time, but because that puts him at risk. And the power doesn't come from him where he's cooking, where he could just adjust the spell. Like he is simply able to follow, you know, because he's read enough things, the ritual he's supposed to do. And if someone throws that off too far, he's just boned. And so, again, that comes back to his vulnerability that he's aware of, you know, more than she is, at least at the beginning.
And so all through this stage where we would say nothing's happening, I think so much is happening between the two of them.
Yeah.
And he's such a... She is less interesting in the middle, I think, because all she is resolve and occasionally prickliness.
Yeah.
Whereas he gets to reveal some more layers of complexity, which I think she gets to at the end. But watching them bounce off of each other, I think is incredibly interesting throughout the middle of it. The guy reminded me of Matt Lucas a whole lot. The British comedian who has, like, one of his main defining characteristics is he has no body hair.
Oh.
Huh.
Do we know this guy, Matt Lucas, who's on Doctor Who? He's in,
He's the guy who plays, he was on,
Bridesmaids.
He was in, the most recent one, wasn't he?
The most recent
Doctor Who,
Doctor Who series, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's kind of a sleek. Kind of looks like a beluga whale.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's completely bald. He has no eyebrows or eyelashes.
Yeah, I think I've seen him somewhere. I don't know.
He's in Shaun of the Dead.
Maybe that's it.
He's a very dry British comedian, but it reminded me of him, only much, much more surly.
Hmm.
I don't know, he comes across as weirdly likable, even when he's reprehensible. And I was kind of rooting for him and sad that he didn't make it all the way through. But as is the case with horror fans a lot of the time, there are plenty of takes on this movie where the movie was just wrecked for people in the last 15 minutes because horror fans really like it when the movie doesn't really happen.
Yeah, they wanted the twist.
Yeah, so there were several reviews that were like, I was so hoping that this would just be, there is no magic, and anything we saw that we thought was magic was just from the character's perspective, and one or both of them end up dead because of the total human thing, and there's no supernatural at all, and like, I get it that is a way that story could be told, but if you're working in a genre where you can seamlessly fold in the supernatural into your character drama, why the fuck wouldn't you?
Yeah, in most cases for me, it's like if you can have there just be a monster or whatever in your movie, just put a monster in your movie. You can't do that on Law and Order. Like, do that in your horror movie.
I had a similar take with The Witch.
Though. Yeah, that's true.
So I think it happens to us all sometimes, but for this one, I don't quite get it. Like, I would have been so deeply disappointed if there had been no payoff. I think it's far more interesting that, yeah, she meets her guardian angel.
Yeah, they certainly earned it, I think.
And plus, that was really fucking rad the way it looked.
Yeah, I agree.
I dug the hell out of that. What did you think of that ending, Charles?
I liked it quite a bit. I would have been, I think given how strong the interaction is between the two of them, for good or for ill, I mean, there are aspects of his personality and aspects of her personality that are not enjoyable at all, you know, and so I think by all these themes we've talked about in terms of like opening the door but not really knowing, what you actually open yourself up to kind of deal, like all that's super, super interesting, and you kind of give that away if that's part of the underlying suspense of some of these things, and you just kind of go, it wasn't really a thing, then, yeah, I guess you can do that, but it's like, I don't know if that's as interesting, given where they put the priorities, you know, and that was kind of an interesting deal to kind of play that off of itself. And plus, I think you get more creative freedom to do more interesting things when you can open up the possibility. Like, somebody talked about where they're talking about Shape of Water, and they're talking about how much just wonderful it really is, and it's like could be considered basically like Guillermo's best movie. But it's like somebody was talking about how like it just sort of Guillermo's del Toro worlds is like these things are, like they just these things exist, like, you know, question, it just sort of is, all these magical fantastical things are, they just are, and it's kind of like, you don't have to have every story set in those worlds where there's access to these things that actually exist, but it's kind of neat when they are. I think it takes a little creativity and confidence to kind of like get after that in a way, because the story, that exists with that in there, I ultimately think is more interesting than the story without it. So, I quite like this. I think it's very good. I think there would have been a lot of ways to make it more dull or, you know, get you less invested in what's really happening. I mean, god damn, that conversation between her and the child, quote unquote, behind the door. Jeez. Yeah,
that's pretty good.
And she's like, I know you're not real, but this, that, whatever. She just says it like, you know, when you're meeting people and people say, you know, it's like, oh, it's nice to meet you. Like, everybody says that all the time. Like,
yeah,
you can just
that's
start
stone
to say,
cold.
It's just like, but she just keeps going. It just kind of, like, without even missing a beat. And it's like, man, that's really kind of nifty.
And I love that she's not fooled for a second, because her character totally wouldn't be.
Oh, no,
that,
no
that,
way.
That
yeah.
would be the trope, yep. You know.
Yeah, and that would be one of those things that could completely blow this movie up, you know. is if it suddenly sinks into her constantly making mistakes because she's chasing after the voice of her kid, which is half of the horror movies with ghosts in them. You know, people doing stupid ass shit. It's like, but you don't get to the point of starving yourself and having weird diets and spending months sequestered at $80,000 if you don't have a little bit of resolve and willpower. So, yeah. You know, they definitely took the high road of, we're giving ourselves a smart protagonist and she will stay smart throughout, which is pretty cool.
I think that this demonstrates that you don't have to have either supernatural elements or good character development drama. And it seems like sometimes the crew that doesn't want movies to have happened says like, well, you should have just gone for the characters instead of adding these supernatural elements. And the supernatural elements in this are kind of an extension of the conflict within the characters.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of demonstrates pretty ably that you can do both of these things. And like, to me, that is kind of what horror is for. Is you have these conflicts that are at a human level and you draw them out into the kind of symbolic or representational level. And like, you can manifest these things in the context of your universe. They don't have to be imaginary and they don't have to be subtext. You know, you can blow them up. So, and this does that in a really cool way.
Yeah, it's kind of a nifty little deal.
So what number you want to put on there, Charlie?
I'll say seven. I'll say 7 out of 10, 7 out of 10, 7 out of 10, not doing a great job at running your game at sex magic.
Gross.
He's like, yeah, it's sex magic. And she's like, uh-huh. It's like, sure it is. It's
like, that wasn't sex magic. Like, no, that was blood sugar sex magic where you're just going to give it away now.
Ah. Gross.
Chad Smith.
Now, this for me was, I was really surprised at this kind of turn by turn and just kind of almost had a similar experience that I did with Mother, even though Mother was more like plastered to the back of my chair, like I was in the Gravitron, unable to blink. And this was more just kind of leaned forward, intrigued and unable to blink, but completely drawn into it, really fascinated with it, and pleasantly surprised that it didn't end with like her looking up and seeing something and we don't get to see what it is and cut to credits.
Right.
Kind of bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like having the balls to follow through on it really impressed me. So overall, yeah, I would say that this is, 7.5 out of 10. Always shave your mage before you start your ritual.
Yeah, that was weird, right? Because they never quite explained that. Because at first you figure, oh, they're going to like shave his entire body. Nope, just his back. So maybe that's just like him having her do like,
and his arms.
Do they do his arms too?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just weird because he keeps a full beard throughout and you're like, okay, that's just strange.
Well, I love that about this movie. There's so much of that though. Like, this is a rock and we're going to put the rock here and you're going to look at the rock and make the rock, you know, it's just all this arcane shit that makes no sense, but seems to operate on internal logic.
It's a good lived in universe for him to kind of splash around in. This is, you know, like I said, it's oddly compelling. It's really hard to do magic in a way that is not silly in a movie, especially if you have to try to like manifest the results of that magic, I think, because it ends up being, you know, even Lord of the Rings, like Gandalf's not doing a whole lot of overt magic. You know, there's people doing things and saying stuff and it just seems like events are influenced. You know, it's a very light touch. And this is like, okay, there's full on just like we did the right stuff and then poink, there's weird ass creatures and monsters and angels. And it's like, oh, that's tough to not make look stupid. And this, I think, makes it look so grueling and workmanlike that, you know, you're not surprised when after all the cement and boards and nails, you have a house at the end. You know, like it seems like they spent the time to build that. So yeah, I dug the shit out of this. I thought it was really fun. I'm kind of looking forward to watching it again just to kind of poke around the corners of it and see what else I might have missed. So I'm kind of right there with you guys. I'm going to say 7.5 out of 10. How many chest freezers does it take to buy the amount of meat he says they need?
Yeah, 6 to 8 months worth of meat.
The electric bill there must be maddening. So
it seems like you want to get aminals because those are pre meat, and I was like, it just seems weird.
And you've got nothing but time.
Well, and then because after a while it gets boring. You gotta add some parsley, sage, and rosemary as well.
Hey.
Look.
Chris, then you gotta be butchering animals like in the living room of this place.
Well, for all you know, you'll need the blood. So.
Yeah. That one scene that she's gotta drink the blood before it congeals and she like chokes it back and sets it down and time jumps back 5 seconds to before she drank it.
That's pretty good.
And he's yelling at her to drink it, like, but I just did. And like, oh, neat. Okay, do we feel like a break or do we feel like soldiering on?
Let's take a quick break.
Okay, quick break it is. We'll be right back with future films for watching. So next up we have pet or mascota, because apparently the word for pet in Spanish is just mascot.
Mascot?
Yeah, his mascota. So it's kind of great to imagine that, you know, people in Spain just have, like, dudes in big foam heads hanging around their house.
Nice.
Using a litter box. I'm sure that porn exists somewhere. But this isn't any of that. It's little Dominic Monaghan of Lord of the Rings fame is kind of a mousy dude who's working at a pet shelter for $9 an hour.
Ksenia Solo is in there, too.
What?
Ksenia Solo, the lady who plays the lady.
Well, sure. I mean, we're getting to the lady.
Oh, okay.
Oh, are we ever?
Becomes obsessed with this girl on the bus who's a waitress and decides to kidnap her and then finds out that she's actually a, like, serial killing sociopath who's going to play head games with him. And it kind of takes off from there, sort of. So, for me, this one was... it was too clumsy and too slight to take off at all. Like, I can imagine the movie where this is a really tense scene by scene, you know, Silence of the Lambs style head games between the two of them. But the dialogue is super clumsy throughout. And he's such an idiot that there's no, like, it's not like cat and mouse and then you find out it's actually cat and then like, oh, maybe it's dog and cat. And there's no swerve where he actually is competent at any point.
I feel like it's cat. Yeah. It's cat and hot dog.
It's like it turns out to be an ocelot and a pet rock.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I think
I feel like cat those are the first and hot two things dog in the universe. Like a Nicktoon.
Yeah, right. I think that was kind of my issue too, is like, I think they wanted very much the Lecter Clarice type of thing, or there's a couple other movies that kind of do that whole thing, but it's the brush is so broad on this one, and it's unsatisfying to me that he kind of dopes his way into this situation. It's like when Goofy accidentally wins the downhill ski race in an old Disney cartoon by falling off of 8 million things and then managing to cross the finish line backwards and wondering what it is he's won and then realizing he entered a contest. You know, it's to use a metaphor I've been hearing a lot lately, it's like the character just shoots an arrow at the wall and then walks up and paints a target around it. Like, and that's how he gets to... Just, you know, that's how he gets to the situation he finds himself in, and it's like, that's kind of unsatisfying. I'd rather have someone be like, oh shit, something's weird about my girlfriend, and then discovering her secret journal, and then because he loves her, trying to, instead of turning her in, like, fix her in this bizarre way, as opposed to just like, derp da derp da derp, I'm a jerk who can't take no for an answer about a date. Oh, because I'm not convinced that he was planning on... Do they show him plan on kidnapping her before he reads the journal? I don't think they do, right? Because it's not like, I'm going to keep her as a pet for my sex slave. No, I read the journal, then I build this thing to keep her as a pet to try to make her not a psycho, right?
Well, yeah, the process happens after the confrontation at the bar.
Okay, yeah, so it's like he just kind of finds out he's just a dipshit and actually the bad guy, you know, until he reads the journal, and then it's like, oh, what a twist. But I don't know. I he's too dopey for me to care.
I mean, and he's still the bad guy.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah.
And that's kind of, it's weirdly gross the way that it's like, ugh, he's doing these gross things, like hitting on her, not taking no for an answer. It's really cringe inducing.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
God, when she says, I have a boyfriend, he goes, no, you don't.
Like, ooh, oh, yeah. And see, for a second there, then you're like, ooh, there's some steel underneath this. Like, this is interesting. And then, no.
But there
he's
isn't
just
any.
Stupid.
But then I feel like the part of what the movie's doing is he's then kind of vindicated because she's a total psycho. And that's really gross.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the message they're trying to get, but that might be part of what comes across.
Like,
yeah.
Oh man, we feel really bad for this girl because he's keeping this girl in a cage. Like, oh, but wait, she's even worse than he is. Like,
but he's obviously still a monster because there's no need to keep her in her underwear. You know, that's purely for his gross period interest. Like, okay, he kidnapped her at night, so she's wearing whatever she sleeps in, which is already highly implausible. But fine, then you bring her to the place. Well, you can drop, you know, some fucking doctor scrubs through the bars of that cage so she can not be sitting there in her underwear while you...
I mean, you can also call the police instead of putting her
sure,
in
sure, sure. But you know, he...
putting the girl in the cage, I think, is where we
but even if
we
accept that he's stupid enough that he doesn't want her to go to jail, he wants to just make her okay so that then maybe he can love her. Like, you're still being a creep. Like, you can't say you're doing this for her own good. There's no reason that keeping her half naked is for her own good. Like...
Also, if he's really that good at welding, why is he working for $9 an hour?
Well, because he wasn't good at welding until he read the internet. Is the way I took it. It's like all those are skills he learned by just reading shit online and ordering things off Amazon. That he, you know.
That pissed me off. Like, he doesn't just buy a dog kennel. Like, you have the scene where he, like, lights the acetylene torch and drops the helmet down, and it's like.
Like, he's the A-team.
Yeah, and also, that is like a $1,500 rig, man. Like, What?
I hadn't even thought of the budget.
Well, I kind of supposed that, like, that 90% of what he needed to make the thing was already there. And then he bought head.
The torch, though.
But he bought the head of the torch on Amazon. But, like, they had, like, because, I mean, you think about, like, dog shelters, animal shelters, like, they can't buy all that stuff retail. My God, they would all, none of them would ever have enough money to do anything. Because, so it seems like they would kind of build stuff. I would assume. Although I could ask, you know, I know someone who actually works at a shelter, or a couple of people work at a shelter here in Austin. I should ask them, because like I'm just assuming that they would be a lot better to buy, kind of have like raw materials and sort of assemble things. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just, you know, making shit up. But it just seems like that was what I supposed was like all this crap was basically there, and it was like, okay, how do you basically take raw materials and then turn it into a thing? And that was the way I took it.
But welding's hard.
Well, like clearly not.
I took an art class where we did a welding unit, and it took several weeks to learn how to do it properly, and I still burned myself because I'm an idiot. And
you're just left-handed.
Yeah,
I have the same problem.
Sinister. That's what I am.
Yes.
But
the things that you guys are talking about though are like logical things, and see, to me, I think what's important with this movie is that like. It's basically a 70s exploitation movie with a nice Los Angeles shiny wrapper on it. I mean, because all it is like a B-movie, is really what it boils down to. Because, like, the whole thing of, like, well, I'm going to step up and save her or whatever. Like, if you really get into logic and policing, like, there is, I mean, a good 40 to 50 instances by which that's not feasible. You know?
Yeah.
Like, there's full stops up one side and down the other. You know, as far as this stuff goes. And so I think it's more just the idea that, like, it is really just a B-movie. Like, I'm going to capture her and make her feel better. And then she'll be really glad. And we'll have this really close connection. And it's like, and it's sort of, I know I'm going to push the issue because she'll see that I'm a really good guy or whatever else. And then realize that, like, oh, there's a lot more going on than we realize. Like, oh, well, now I can save her. And then she's going to be really appreciative. And that'll be a really wonderful connection that we have. And it's sort of like, it's like, I know nature. Like, nature don't give a shit. And I think she's supposed to be really kind of a force of nature in a lot of respects. And sort of like, dum-dum, you should have realized right from the beginning. Like, it's like that little Far Side cartoon. If you've ever seen the old one 10,000 years ago, it says how nature says do not touch. And it's like a pufferfish that's all puffed up, and like a rattlesnake is rattling, and then like porcupine, the quills are out. And the fourth shot is like a guy with like floaty wings and like a bazooka, and like a inflatable tube around his stomach, and then like a weird hat. And it's like how nature says do not touch. And in this situation, it's kind of like if he didn't have those delusions of grandeur, he would have read that thing through 2 seconds and been like, yeah, I was totally into this girl. She's not into me. We went to school together. Just, you know, this, that, whatever else. This seems really scary. You know, blah, 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 blah. End. You know, like that's what you do. But at the same time, though, God damn it. The process of him doing the Rocky III process, when he knocks himself out with a combination of drugs.
I really like that.
God, that was cool. I really dug that a lot. I thought that was really neat. What's the thing? Oh, and then also the thing of like the, you know, when he says when, before things really go awry and he's like in his apartment trying to practice what he's gonna say to her, like, oh, hey, you know, like, nice running to you again. And so, and he's like trying out the different ways of saying stuff. I really enjoyed that part of it too, cause it's sort of, I think we all have gone down that road a time or two in our lives, you know, which I kind of enjoyed that part of it. But I really like Senia Solo in this. I think she does a good job. I mean, some of the writing for her is not the best, but I think she's interesting. I think she's kind of compelling. You know, she drops lines like, you know, they've got the dead security guard guy, and she's like, well, it's a good thing no one got hurt. You know, and she's talking to the security guard, talking over his shoulder, saying like, you know, what happens if you love somebody so much and then this thing happened, it took him away, and da da da, you know, all that's kind of jazz. And it's just like, it's like, God, that's just straight up evil. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, I don't know, there's something really kind of cool to that. I wish some of the writing was a little stronger, because I thought she really kind of dove into that and just played this yucky little bit of business. And that was kind of nice.
Yeah, I mean, there is that, like, she is good enough in this that, like you said, if the material had been there, it would have been super interesting. But she, the shit that she gets to say and the setup that she's in doesn't serve her.
I think the,
like, you could tell throughout what kind of movie this wants to be. And I just don't think it's good enough at it to be it. And like, when we're talking about nitpicking the logic of stuff, I agree that if this were, in my opinion, like a really fun ride, I wouldn't be nitpicking his ability to weld.
Right.
Like,
yeah for
I
sure.
I fucking loved Wolf Cop. Wolf Cop made no fucking sense.
Right.
But when it's not like rubbing your pleasure nub, then, wow. Yeah.
But yeah, and I think Charlie, the idea that this is just you know, an exploitation flick that has a shiny wrap around it, I think that might be the whole thing. If this looked low budget and grimy, I'd be like, well, yeah. I mean, they've got a mediocre story, they got mediocre budget, they've got maybe some mediocre skill, but they're doing their damnedest to put a thing together. Then I might see it as like plucky. As opposed to, like, there's so much spit and polish on this that it's just, like, it really shines a light on the weakest part, which is, I think, the writing in this one. Because, I mean, these people are all capable actors. Like, they clearly know what they're doing, and it looks good. But it just, it doesn't have the oomph, and you don't think of it as, this is a C-level script. But it's got, like, you know, B-plus, A-minus level cinematography and art behind it, you know what I mean? So I think that might be why it kind of rubbed me wrong. But I bet if you gave this the kind of that grindhouse feel, I'd be like, yeah, whatever, it's one of those weird ass movies from the 70s, and there's like the guy kidnaps the girl to save her, and you'd be like, ah, it's trash, but it's kind of fun to watch. And I think that might be the thing. It might be too polished for its own good, or at least for me to enjoy it on that level.
I think that's a very good point, and I think that happens. You know, I think that happens.
Because I'm more forgiving stuff. Thinking of it in that perspective. I still didn't enjoy it. This is my least favorite movie this week. Because it's just kind of, yeah, I was just sort of bored. Like, this is the one this week that I was kind of checking my watch.
And I feel like there was that definitely for me, but then also just the kind of politics of it are too reprehensible, where if you're going to have a movie where a guy keeps a girl in a cage, even if you're going to play that a little bit for the whoa-ho-ho kind of deal, you need to be more clear on who's right and who's wrong in that scenario. And I think they come down a little too heavily on, well, she's clearly really the villain of this piece. Like, well, no. Like, in a more heavy, a more even-handed version of this, she could be, like, the tiger in the cage, for sure. But the person who put her in the cage is still the asshole. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know. Something about it left me feeling a little unclean. Well,
and that's where that B-movie thing is back into play. Because, like, think about, like, okay, he's got her in a cage. And then she tries to scream, but the dogs are barking all the time. Although, she took her little, like, bedpan on there and just started banging it on the thing incessantly. At some point, somebody in that building would be like, you're not banging. What is that banging?
Well, security.
Where did that come from?
The security dude is down in that hallway at least twice in this film. So, a non-animal sound would attract attention. I would like to point out, too, he's not a stupid security guy. I mean, he's dozing off when it's 2:30 in the morning, which is, yeah, I mean, he's a bit of a dick, but he's not bad at his job and he's not stupid. Like, you see him, like, kind of falling asleep at 2:30 in the morning. I've been a security guard, that's what happens. You know, and like, but he's poking around, and when he sees dude doing shit that isn't normal for dude, he's like, dude, what the fuck? You know, and he's not like wickedly incompetent, which is almost the only security guard you ever see in a movie. So I thought that was interesting. And that's the closest you get to seeing, I guess he's technically the protagonist guy, you know, our keeper of pet. That's the closest you get to seeing someone acknowledge him as a bad guy. Was through the security officer, mm-hmm. but that's, you know, very brief and kind of just a light touch, so it doesn't really do much.
Well, but that's what I mean about, that's what I said about the thing about the bedpan thing, is it's like, by his whole mechanism of this whole plan, it's like, what happens if he's going to get on the bus and gets sideswiped and gets dropped in the hospital for like a month?
I thought of that too, yeah.
It's like, she did. You know, it's just like, the mechanics are just, are funky. That's like what all the Jigsaw related things. It's like everything has a very specific amount of time. You know, yeah. It's sort of like, and he's got a very specific plan. Whereas in this situation, it's just like dumb shit slips on a banana peel and falls out and gets amnesia. Then homegirl's dead. And so sort of like, well, that's not so good.
Yeah. Or just for, I mean, even tease it in the movie though. Like if he gets fired and she's just dead.
Oh yeah. 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 That was another part of it. That was, I want to give it the benefit of the doubt and think that, like, at its core, it is just it's a dumb exploitation movie that just happens to look slick in LA, and it's sort of like, and I think that draws away from it. Although, I do like the two lead actors. I thought that part of it was, cool. And then also cutting up the fella, and then, like, there's no reason for them to sashimi up that dude and feed him to the dogs, cause, like, he's tossing their parts. So it's like, I don't really know why they're like, oh, we gotta feed some of the dogs too. Like, why?
Yeah, that makes no goddamn sense.
Yeah, it makes zero sense.
Put everything in the incinerator, really.
Yeah, it's just like.
Yeah, I think that's just him. I think that just shows him kind of under her thrall, where she's like, and feed him to the dogs. And he's like, but couldn't I just incinerate? No, feed some to the dogs.
Okay. because I've read Hannibal.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so anything else we gotta. Absolutely have to get off our chest about this one. I hated the fucking ending of her, like, going to see him in the cage. And he's got, like, the long hair and then, like, apparently got better from having his throat slit.
Yeah, that was a...
Just fucking idiotic.
I think it wasn't unexpected to have her keep him around as the pet and to kind of just beat the shit out of him, take out her impulses. Like, that... That makes sense in the movie universe. Getting your throat slashed is a strange one to come back from. You'd think just like a knife stab in the stomach or something would be what you'd expect to see that, because usually the slit throat is pretty final. I guess you've got this and then, well, I guess Danny Glover in the Saw franchise. But
it's pretty rare. Like, you watch her leave the room while he's bleeding out.
And then she thinks better of it and comes running back.
But again, you know, that's the logic thing. Like the expected ending is that she's going to end up with him in a cage. Like, of course. I just wish that they would have made it easier for me to believe that. So, yeah, no, I was not really feeling this much. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the actors, for sure. It's shot fine. It's just, it's deeply dumb. And dialogue is, I mean, there's just the girl talking to her friends. The dialogue is just so clunky and, like, they're messing up the simplest two people interacting with each other shit. It's like, have you ever talked to someone in your life? And, you know, the words that they use to say things like the humans do. So, yeah, I was frustrated with this one. I would say it's like a 3.5 out of 10. Coming out of my cage and I've been doing just fine.
I'm gonna go to your dad because I'm on the note.
Exactly.
What do you say, Charlie?
I like this quite a bit more. I mean, I'm not going to say like crazy up and above, so I'll say a little bit above, just a marker above Switzerland. So I'll say 5.5 out of 10, 5.5 out of 10. Man, I'm going to go pepper spray a hobo.
At least it's not a kabuki hobo.
Hey-o. yeah, this one, it never really had much of a pulse. Like, you know, that moment when he's kind of like building his whole thing and then he steals the drugs from work and he's sitting at home like, oh my God, he's going to test it on himself to see if it works. And like what, you know, how quick he has once he does it. I'm like, that's really fucking cool. And that was like the one time I got a little excited during this movie about something looking kind of rad. So that's not a lot to really hang your hat on. There's a way to make this a fun exploitation movie, and there's probably a way to make this like a smart, slick movie, and this was just kind of neither. So, yeah, I'm gonna say this is a, like a 4 out of 10. Why not? 4 out of 10. Despite all my rage, I'm still just a blonde in a cage.
Well played.
Thank you.
Just a real quick potty break and then the third one? Yes?
Sounds good.
Okay, Trina.
Dance in the living room. Okay.
Finally, we have It Comes at Night, or Viene en la Noche. En la Noche. ¿Por qué? Charlie, do you want to take the lead on this? I haven't got a whole lot to say about it, to be perfectly frank and perfectly earnest.
Know what I mean, Vern? So this is an interesting situation where, this one is, regardless of what you think of the movie on the whole, this is one of those ones that I am a strong believer in the idea that this was so grossly mismarketed that
that's the point I came here to make.
Oh yes.
That's a bummer because I think that his other movie, Krisha, which is really good, like this former addict lady comes back home with her family and it's crazy tense and it's really, really good. I think this guy is just legit talented. I think he's a really smart guy. I think he's very creative. But I think they took this, like, breakdown of a thing, the kernel of an idea about the deconstruction of decency in the construct of, like a panic disease. And they were like, well, this is going to be – we're going to call this and build out as, like, a horror type of a thing. And it's like it's a frustrating deal because, I think it's really good and I think it's kind of scary and eerie and all this kind of stuff. I think from the onset, it just kind of, it stacked the deck in the wrong way. And whether or not you take a thing on its own merits, but, that's a big time albatross around its neck, I think. That being said, there's parts of this that really nerved me out first. There's parts of it that definitely I think are scary, but I don't know that it's a really right down the middle of strike zone horror movie.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you say like this is a, even if you say like this is a zombie movie about a family who has to survive in the wilderness, then another family that comes in, you're already setting up expectations that this movie's not interested in meeting.
Yeah,
because there's really no external threat as powerful as what's happening in between the families, and like there are no scenes of zombies attacking people. So if that's the ticket that you bought, I can see some frustration there. Like I ended up just not really digging it even as a character drama. Because I didn't think the characters were very clearly defined, and that the kid, the older kid,
Travis,
bugged the hell out of me. And the fact that his family treated him like he was 5 or 6 when he's 17 and clearly of normal human, like, mental faculty just really got under my skin in the beginning, and that never got out from under my skin, I guess. And I don't know, you're kind of waiting for, you're on the Godot Superman Guffman train, you know, just waiting for the there to arrive, and I don't think it ever does with this. It other than to make a pretty obvious point that people are shitty when things get tense.
Yeah, I mean, lesson that, like, you know, the real thing we have to fear is each other is a pretty well-worn groove in that trope at this point. Yeah, like this movie had like a really cool looking trailer, and I think it suffers from that and the title that implies there's an it. Like, that you expect there to be something influencing these people's behavior aside from just stress. And, you know, there, you can make movies that are just about that. That's not like a thing that can't work. But I think, yeah, just I was sold a totally different bill of goods. And then I tried to kind of reframe it in my head as just, okay, then how about this for what it is? And it's fine for that, but it's both like a little too long to be just a couple of groups of people going nuts for a day, and also, you know, I guess a little longer than that, but you know what I mean? We it happens very quickly. And then I guess that's the other complaint then, is it's the movie itself is too long to support that tension for me, and also the whole thing is compressed so quickly to get from family by itself to family getting guy to accepting new family to destroying relationship with new family. Like, that also just seems like it's just rushed. So, like, once it starts going, it's going too fast, but at the same time, the movie's kind of plodding. And I don't know how that makes no sense when you say it, but I kind of felt both of those things at the same time watching this. Just, like, this one is just a bit tedious, and yet the stuff just felt like it was like, okay, now they've met the family so they can trust each other. We've had the event that allows for that. Now we've had the event to allow for them to sow some seeds of discord. It just got really paint-by-numbers to me, so... I don't know. I just, it's weird because this is the one that, like, Dave and Kirsten were like, have you guys watched this one yet? And I'm like, no, we haven't. He's like, you got to go see it. You got to see this movie. You got to see this movie. I can't wait to talk about it with you. I'm like, all right. I'm like, I'm real excited to see that. The trailer looked good. I just assume we'll do it for the podcast soon. So I haven't watched it otherwise. And now I'm going to like, oh man, now I got to have a really awkward conversation this weekend where I'm like, yeah, I saw it and it was terrible. Like, I'll be curious to see what they liked about it. And maybe that can kind of bring me around a bit. But, see, I don't know. I wanted some outside. Oh, sorry. No, I'm almost done here, I guess. But I wanted some outside force aside from the nebulous threat of disease to give this a reason to ratchet the tension up more than something that I guess is such a slow burn. Like, what if you've got a slight infection or something? I don't know. It seems like there should have been more there, and there just kind of wasn't. But yeah, go ahead, Charlie.
Oh, no, I think that's fair. I watched one, Friday or Thursday called Thelma. It's a Norwegian one where it's like, we spent a lot of time in second gear. And you're like, is there going to be a there? And I'm like, how about just a little bit? And I'm like, no, but like a lot more. And I don't want to do that. And it's like, well, but why? And like, we don't know. I think what you said is valid. The other overarching theme that I kind of pull out of this one, and I thought was kind of neat, was that, like, and this could be one of those going down your own belly button type of things, but it definitely had that feeling of being like we say one thing. We say, this is what we're going to do. This is what we believe. We believe in this thing. We don't believe in this thing. We're going to do this thing. We don't do the other thing. And then people, like, compromise that stuff and, like, you know, are inconsistent constantly in life. You know, and like Jason Clark, it's Edgerton plays the lead in this one. Joel Edgerton. It's like he's so militant in the beginning, like, no, I'm gonna shoot you 50 yards, you know, there's whatever else. And then it's like, once you bring in the human element, like, well, maybe not. Maybe we just kind of have this will be okay. We'll work it out in the middle kind of a thing. And it's like, if up to that point, what's kept you alive is this militancy, like, where is the breakdown of your procedure? And it's humanity. That's your weak link. On paper, the other thing makes much more sense. You know, but it's like the weak link is humanity. And it's like, and that's where that, I see that like kind of flip flop between that and then like kind of the hell is other people kind of a thing, like those things interplaying, which I think is really interesting. Whether or not they really hit it out of the park as far as that goes, that, you know, that's here or there. But I just was kept thinking how interesting it is to see somebody be like, this is what we do. And then like, are you going to do it all the time? Absolutely not.
I just want to know how they kept getting that door open. Like, this is the most secure part of your house. How come it's not secure?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and the, you know, that's a thought that you have when the movie's not getting at you. I think part of it is there's not anything surprising in the way that this plays out. It's really inevitable from the get-go. You know what's going to happen. And it's as soon as it's clear that no external force is really coming in, this is not a defend the house kind of movie. Mm-hmm. Then, I mean, like my wife watches, you know, a third of the movies with us. So she's not as genre savvy mm-hmm. as we are. But as soon as that kid showed up, the 5-year-old, she's like, oh, that kid's toast.
Yeah.
I was like, yep. He's probably already sick. I'm like, yep, totally was. And we just called every single shot. And, you know, a movie can be predictable and still be good, but it's got to have something else working for it. So, yeah, like when this was over, I was mad at it. And I think I've kind of simmered down from that to say, like, hey, you know, it's not incompetent. It's just, I found it really dull and was kind of resented that I watched it. And then I decided to get it on Redbox to save money and then forgot to return it for 3 days. So it cost the same as renting it on Amazon. And
oh,
so
that annoyed me too. I love when I do that.
Right. It's like, damn it. And Redbox, you knew it. That's why you only cost $2.
Hail Satan.
Yeah.
I don't know. What else can we say?
I would say that as cheesy as it is to say, I will say again that I think that this guy has a lot of talent, and mm-hmm. I would like, I mean, Krisha is more of like a tense family drama thriller thing. That's really good. I don't know if I'd describe this as like a step back necessarily, but it's like, it's definitely a different thing, or maybe he didn't have the tools by which to bring, as you were saying, you guys called the shots, and Matt, you were saying, you know, like, really seeing the paint by numbers aspect of it. Like, if you've got the eye, if you've got the rhythm, if you've got the way to bring stuff out of dark spaces, in these type of ways, like, take those set of, that skill set and then just slide over and work with some other people that can really bring something to it. You know, like, Joel and Ethan Coen are brilliant directors, they're brilliant writers, they're so creative and interesting. But Roger Deakins has shot almost all their movies, and there's a reason for that. Because he's better at that job than they are. And it's sort of like, that's no slant on the Coens, but it's just like, that's, you know, I mean, you put one and one together. And it's like, I think this fella, this young man, I think he's very, very talented. I want him to get into something that's gonna, that'll have some more meat. Something legitimate, something really, really grounded with a lot of, work. Like, there's one that came out, this one called Uncle John that came out a few years ago. I saw South by, I think it's on Netflix, or a cool low-key noir thriller thing. Great movie, but like, shot is okay. Like, take this kid and then throw him into that one. I'm like, whoa. Then you really get a cool aesthetic thing going on. So I mean, yeah, this thing, I think he's really, really talented, so I want to see what else he's gonna do. I was more on the positive end of this one than a lot of people, and like I said, the kind of hypocrisy of faith and humanity is an interesting theme. So I would say six out of ten. How much would it break the tension if they had one of those funny little electronic buzzers on the door? So it would open up and goes, bing, boom.
Awesome.
Delightful.
And I had a bad experience with this, especially after like starting my week with Mother and Dark Song, to just have this kind of, I don't know, horror adjacent. It almost gave me the same feel as like Creep and Willow Creek, where it's like this is somebody who is not a horror director who's going to make a horror movie without being aware of any of the tropes and what's tired and what works in the genre, which is not, you know, I can't really level that accusation against this dude because I don't know his whole body of work, but it had that feel of like, you don't get it. Like, you're not surprising me with any of this. I don't know if I can say if it's better or worse than Pet. I mean, I guess it, as a movie, it is better than Pet. So I will stick it at a 3.75 out of 10. Don't Open the Red Door. Ooh. By Elizabeth Arden.
I don't get that joke. Yeah, I just, man, I wish I saw the movie that I saw the trailer for. You know, and it's kind of shitty in a cop out to like lament the movie you didn't get that you wanted, but I feel like it's not entirely my fault. So, yeah, just, it's a little too, there's nothing here that broke any real new ground for stuff for me. It didn't do anything terribly poorly, but it certainly didn't do anything to really light up the screen here. Like, you know, for being a movie as kind of slow and patient as A Dark Song was, it's another movie that is a very slow build, except that I wasn't, you know, like you said, Josh, like leaning in, you know, intrigued the whole time. I was kind of leaning back, kind of waiting for something to happen. So yeah, this is, I'd say, I don't know, it's still better than Pets. So it's like a, we'll give it like a 5 out of 10. Let's say 5 out of 10, black bile vomits.
Won't you come? All right, we'll take a quick break then, and we'll be back with our films for the next a week. So next week we decided to do an each one pick one kind of scenario. So I picked Gerald's Game. He's Mike Flanagan directed. It's going to hit Netflix on Friday the 29th, and I'm super excited to see it. So we're going to do that. Matt chose The Wolfman, the original 1941 joint with is it Lon Chaney or Lon Chaney?
Lon Chaney Jr.
Lon Chaney Jr.
As well as like Bela Lugosi, okay, and Claude Rains. There's like an amazing cast in that.
Yeah, because you can always tell which one's which, because Junior's like the one with the big buggy head.
Yep.
Well, he's the one you see walking with the Queen doing the Werewolves of London.
Exactly.
That's very true.
Yep.
That's Warren Zevon wants it.
Exactly. Charlie chose Dead Awake, which as soon as I saw the poster, I was like, is that Jocelyn Donahue?
Yep.
It totally is. Well, now I know why Charlie chose that.
I'm a thin bit of vellum. The guy.
Sure, yeah. yeah, so Dead Awake, that one's available on Netflix. So is Gerald's Game. Wolfman is an Amazon.
It's like $2-3 on Amazon, yeah.
Yeah. Our short film this week is called Zombie Musical, and it is the short that Anna and the Apocalypse was based on. So that was the movie that Charlie was really digging on at Fantastic Fest. So we're going to see the short that kicked it off, and then later on we'll get to compare that with the finished film.
Yes.
So that's it. Gerald's Game, Wolfman, Dead Awake, Zombie Musical is a short. That'll be linked in the show notes. Visit us, if you would, at hshd.podbean.com. You can get old episodes on harshowhotdog.com, as always. And you can find us on social media pretty much everywhere. And I've been Josh for as long as I can remember. And I'm just going to say bye.
Hey, two quick things. One, 'tis the season to get your Count Chocula, Frankenberry, and Booberry on, which I was telling the guys I did today. So go enjoy the beginning of Halloween season. And two, I got the email from Convergence that comes out around this time of year as they're starting gearing up for the panels for next year. And they released the feedback they got from panels for the previous year. And we got positive feedback from people that came to see the little Horror Show Hot Dog hour-long shorts extravaganza thing as part of CinemaRex. So thanks if you came to see that again. And thanks for actually providing the convention with some positive feedback for us, because I'm sure they like to know that people liked what we were doing. So hopefully we'll get to do it again next year. We'll find out and let you know. As far as y'all know, I've been mad this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Don Austin. Take care. Have a good week. And just a little quick side note. I don't know if anybody has noticed, but there was some chitter chatter going around with the new Cult of Chucky and the new Leatherface getting leaked, but either by a press screener that got put online or some other kinds of thing. And there's a lot of entitlement talk and this, that, and anywhere else. And I know we get inconsistent here because sometimes things are not available. We go on YouTube to find them because they're just not physically available or other kinds of things. But these are two movies from kind of small budget, small production company people that are putting them out through. And if you're drawn away from that 3 weeks ahead of when they're trying to actually, like, even recoup budget, let alone anything else, I would like to cordially invite you to fuck your own nostril. So, other than that, have a good week. Bye-bye.